It's the drive on TSN 1200. Here's what you need to know today. Honestly, this is the deadest point of the year. Everyone talks about July. The NHL has helped contribute to the... There's like nothing in need to know. Red Blacks signed Canadian receiver Tavon Smith. There's some Olympic stuff we can talk about. There's really not much you need to know today. There's a lot of features when you go on TSN or ESPN or the various sports websites. What you need to know is the NHL is down 22% in ratings because the commissioner of the league is clueless. That's what you need to know today.
And I missed this, but I just said to you while we were on the break, Cap Friendly tweeted that the Senators had moved Artem Zub from the IR to the NHL. And this was, 18 hours ago.
Yeah.
And I was just having a chuckle because there's like, so you can follow, Cap Friendly has a Twitter account called Cap Friendly Transactions. So as their NHL transactions happen, Cap Friendly tweets them out. So this was from 18 hours ago. IR to NHL, Artem Zub, hashtag go sends go. And they list all of, you know, contract details and everything. There's like 23 replies. Almost all of them are just like Zub, Zub, Zub. Sometimes Zub with three U's or four U's. But that's the replies to all of it is just Zub. So there you go, Senators fans. It sounds like when they get back, so will Artem Zub. Unless this has just been a paperwork thing for the break or something, but there you go.
So that's good news for sure. There's one other story I wanted to hit on. Canada to follow the IOC's lead on Russia and Belarus in the 2024 Olympics.
Of course. We're followers, not leaders.
Canadian Olympic Committee accepts the IOC's exploration of a way for Russia and Belarus to compete in Paris as neutrals, along with other current sanctions. I've said this before, like, Russia wasn't kicked out of the World Cup because FIFA all of a sudden had morals and everyone just decided, well, FIFA, that's what FIFA said, so we're just going to follow what FIFA said. Countries and players stepped up and said, we're not playing them. It started with Poland and Robert Lewandowski. It continued with the Czechs and the Swedes. And then after that, oh, everyone jumped on board. Okay, I guess it's safe to jump on board. And you've got countries right now, mainly Eastern European countries that border Russia, in Poland, Lithuania, Estonia, Latvia. They issued a joint statement today urging a ban on those two countries from international sport and the Olympic Games. Poland's sport minister says he believes a coalition of 30 to 40 countries, including Canada, can be convinced to reject Russian and Belarusian participation in Paris, and that's what it's going to take, right? And for Canada just to say we're going to follow the IOC's lead on this, I'm not expecting them to give an answer one way or the other. But to say that they're going to follow the IOC's lead on this, to me, is really frustrating. I could use stronger words, but at the very least, it's frustrating.
We mentioned this the other day, and I said to you, I didn't think we should have even gone to China. I mean, we should have taken a stand and just said, look, that's what they understand. That's what gets them, is when you do something like that. But we never do it. So that's why so many of these countries just continue to do the reprehensible things that they do, because there's no consequences. We don't want to deny the athletes the opportunity. Well, sometimes it's bigger than you getting your opportunity to go to an Olympic Games. Sometimes human rights is going to be bigger than a sporting event. And if there's a boycott that your government says that it's instituting because it's finally going to put its foot down and say this isn't right, and we feel like this is a in the big scheme of things, this is a small thing that we can do to make a statement that says we think what you are doing is reprehensible.
You can't send a message to Russia to basically normalize things. They want things to be normalized, whether it's economic, certainly when it comes to areas where they use it as propaganda, like sports.
Right.
So if you send the message that this is normal, they're just going to keep doing what they're doing. If you isolate them, the more you isolate them, the more their people will be frustrated at what's going on.
You might know better than I do, but was not that the sports environment, and maybe it had only a small effect, but I think back to the 76 Olympic Games, like,
yeah,
there was a huge push within the sports community to cut ties with South Africa because of apartheid. And that had to have something to do with things changing.
Well, 1976, there were a number of countries that boycotted, and they boycotted. South Africa was already excluded, but they boycotted because New Zealand,
there you go,
played South Africa in rugby, two big powers. So they played them in rugby, and they wanted New Zealand out.
Yeah.
It should be pretty, there's certain parts of this that I get aren't simple, gray areas. NHL has a very difficult job. I get that. I don't even know what the answer is in terms of Russian hockey players. I know what Dominik Hasek thinks. Dominik Hasek doesn't think hockey players should be playing in the NHL. He doesn't think tennis players should be playing in tournaments like the Australian Open. And we saw in Melbourne exactly how propaganda was used. There were a lot of Russians there supporting with Putin flags, supporting their athletes at that tournament. At the very least, this one, so there are a lot of gray areas. I get
it. It's incredibly complicated.
But this one feels like it's pretty easy. And you know what? For me personally, I would allow Belarus, and it doesn't mean I'm right, I would allow Belarus under the neutral flag because their athletes and their people have shown that they don't really support this. But the Russian people, like, this is not something that's happening against the will of the majority of the Russian people, either in Russia or even those that are beyond the borders right now. They support this war in really high numbers. Doesn't mean every person supports it, but it's a majority of Russians inside Russia, outside the borders. It has nothing to do with fear of what's going to happen to them because they support it in big numbers outside the country. Otherwise, they wouldn't be going to Melbourne with Putin flags. They think they're the wrong party here. So their athletes shouldn't be able to compete, period. Belarus, I'd be okay in a neutral flag. I don't know if that does anything, but I feel for the Belarusian people because their country, as far as I'm concerned, and I was there in 2019, still have friends that are there. Their country was basically annexed,
yeah,
by Russia over the course of the last couple of years when the Russians saved Lukashenko's rear end. So it's difficult. It's not easy navigating the whole politics and sports conversation, but to me, Canada should be a leader on this.
Agreed. But we're not leaders. We're followers. Somebody on Parliament Hill's always got their, you know, finger up trying to figure out which way the wind is blowing.
Pretty easy. No, like, again, I didn't need a grand statement saying for sure we're not in right now. The Olympics, now qualifying and stuff is going to start in various events quite quickly. But the Summer Olympics, we're still talking about next summer. So there's some time here. I don't need a definitive answer, but to say you're following the IOC's lead, to me, is not good enough from the Canadian Olympic Committee, and our Canadian government really disappointed in that news today.
History tells us that the IOC does not set a very high bar.
No. No, they don't, and they won't unless they're pressured.
Yeah.
They're back. FIFA was backed into a corner. The IOC can be backed into a corner as well. Pretty simple thing.
Yeah.
The Olympics without Australia and Japan and Canada and the United States and Western Europe what do you have then? Right? I don't really know what you have. And if you ban them, who else is going to decide to boycott? North Korea, Syria, and Eritrea?
Boo-hoo.
Take a break. When we come back, talk some basketball with James Derwin, head coach of the Ottawa GGs men's team. Capital Hoops tomorrow. Looking forward to that at the arena at TD Place. We'll have it right here for you on TSN 1200. Women's game at 6. Men's game to follow. And we'll talk about the GGs ahead of schedule in terms of a young team. A couple of young teams on the men's side in Carlton on Ottawa. Looking forward to both games tomorrow. We'll talk to James on the other side as we continue with The Drive on TSN 1200. The Drive on TSN 1200, AJ Jakubek, Chris Stevenson, Cam Clement producing. Let's get to the Gabriel Pizza Hotline. He's the head coach of the Ottawa GGs men's basketball team, James Derwin. James, how you doing today?
It's getting a little cold out here, but otherwise I'm pretty good. Thanks for having me on, guys.
Yeah, well, the good news is at least the game's not being played outdoors tomorrow, so there's that.
Man, it's like, I don't know, I feel like we're like batting 50% on the coldest day of the year lining up with Capital Hoops. It's going to be wild tomorrow. We're supposed to hit minus 40 with the wind? Is that what I'm...
Yeah, that's what Matt Scooby told us.
Oh, man. No thanks.
I hear you. Well, inside, it's going to be nice and warm. A couple of big games tomorrow between the GGs and Ravens. The women's game first at 6, the men's game to follow. First off, for you, what does this game mean for you just as an Ottawa guy, for the city, for basketball, for your program, something where you get a chance, much like Panda, to play in front of a bigger crowd than usual?
Yeah, I think that's the, the part that jumps out to me is the opportunity for our kids to play, in sort of as close to a Division I high major sort of atmosphere and stadium with, 8,000 to 10,000 people, the two schools, yelling and screaming and everybody at the game, and just an awesome environment for the players to get to experience that. As we know, the U Sports, sort of crowds and things tends to waver a little bit, but this is a special night for the players and also just a special sort of night for both programs. And it's always just a culmination of the success, obviously, Carlton's championships and the battles that we've had with them. And, it's just basketball is huge in this city. It's a hockey town, but I think people, I'm always said it's a really underrated basketball market, and it gets to put that on display, which is great for the sport.
Like you said, it's a special week, a special game. As a coach, how much more this week are you kind of monitoring the temperature of your room and your players? You don't want people getting too wound up. You want them focused on the task at hand. But how much different is your job this week than it is week to week?
I mean, it's an interesting question because there's times where, like I said, with the travel and some of the smaller schools that, around Ontario that we need to visit, like firing guys up is all, part of the job at mm-hmm. times. And then, with games like this, it's sort of keeping the guys even keeled. But at the same time, like fired up is a good place to be. Like it's one of those games where, I don't necessarily have to, play the marionette strings a little bit and get them, tell them some narrative about the team and get them all fired up. It's like everyone's locked in, everyone's getting their sleep, everyone's ready to go. And so it's really just about, strategy and just getting ready to play. I can kind of remove that card and not have to worry about it, which is nice. Honestly, it's a fun time to coach the team.
And always it's a case where at least, ever since I've been calling the Capital Hoops Classic, which goes back to 2011, it's always two teams that are amongst the best in the country, and no different this year. I mean, your team's 14-3, Carlton 13-4, which is more losses than, they've ever had at this time of year over the course of the last 20 years. So, but still two very good programs and an opportunity, I'm sure, to test yourself against, one of the best programs in the country. It's been the best program in the country for the last 20 years, but one of the best teams in the country as well in that environment.
No, I mean, that's what, you're trying to get your team, all the you know, the programs that are in the top five, top eight in the country, you know, opportunities like this to prepare your team for the Nationals, right? Like in an environment like this, in a high pressure situation, you get to see who's, you know, who's there, who can handle these types of situations. I mean, you can't replicate that in any other, you know, league game. So, I mean, obviously it's just technically another league game. And certainly that's the message that we're giving our players. But as a coaching staff, it's an opportunity to prepare our team against, you know, one of, you know, if not the best team in the country, in an environment such as this that we can, you know, we can use moving forward into the OUA playoffs and hopefully a trip to Nationals.
How much of this for you and your group is focusing on what you need to be successful? And like you said, you're playing one of the best programs in the history of Canadian sports. How much of it is stopping them from what they want to do well? I mean, you can kind of get sometimes, I think, too focused on what the other team does and you get away from what you do well. How do you kind of walk that tightrope going into this game and you throw all the emotion into it as well?
Yeah, I mean, I think you got to find a balance, right? I mean, you certainly have to, you know, prepare for what they do. You know, their execution, their defense, you know, the things that make them special. And then at the flip side, you got to always worry about your team and, you know, and make sure that, you know, you remember who we are and what we do. And we have to be able to establish that as well. So, you know, certainly whether it's Carleton or Queens or any of the top teams, you know, sort of managing that balance is key, but yeah, you don't want to get overwhelmed with, you know, them and what are we going to do? And, you know, and forget about, you know, how good you are and making sure that you establish, you know, your identity and put your own, you know, sort of thumbprint on the game and make them worry about us, right? Like, I think if you don't come in with that attitude, then, you know, especially against Carleton, you're going to struggle. You got to sort of throw that first punch and let them know that you're here to play.
James Derwin, head coach of the Ottawa GGs men's basketball team, Capital Hoops Classic, tomorrow on TSN 1200, women's game at 6, men's game to follow. So what is your team all about this year?
Well, I mean, you know, our defense has been our sort of staple for this season. We've been in and around the top three in the country defensively all year. You know, our offense is, you know, it's had its moments where it's looked elite, and then we've struggled in certain games. But our defense has managed to really keep us afloat in those games. So, you know, we're proud of, you know, what we do defensively, and we certainly want to establish that first, and then. Like I said, our offense is, you know, at times when we're making shots and doing things well, it can look really good, but we've had some moments where we're struggling and, you know, struggling, you know, and still at a 22-4 clip on the season. And, so really just a team that is still sort of figuring things out, you know, at a championship level. I think certainly we're a good team. But that consistency is still sort of that championship level piece, that we're still working forward to establish. And we saw that last week, you know, 2 weeks ago, we had probably our best weekend in Toronto. And then a week later, you know, we probably have one of our toughest weekends after getting the number one ranking. So, you know, that's our team right now. And you know, I think I'm proud of where we are, but I know that to get to the championship in terms of a national championship, we still got a long way to go.
How do you address that issue of consistency?
Well, I mean, I'm sure there's a lot of coaches in a lot of sports certainly that, you know, would love to get an answer on that on their teams. You know, I think it starts with treating every game the same, you know, making sure that the players understand that, you know, this is what we do. It doesn't matter who we're playing. And then, you know, and then some of it takes time, right? Like you got to go through the grind together. You got to take losses like we did to Queens. We got to play games like Capital Hoops, and we got to find out things about our team. And then you got to learn and grow from them and make sure that you repeat the things that make you successful and then try to cut back on the things that hurt you. And the closer you can get to that, I think you're going to have a better chance. And whether that comes from years of experience or games, you know, I mean, that's a different sort of path for each player and each team.
Mm-hmm.
But I think consistency from the coaching staff and the messaging is key. And then you got to let the players grow and figure that out. And hopefully you figure it out, you know, in time to make a run, you know, into the playoffs.
Just in terms of U Sports, and I mean, U Sports was hit hard by the pandemic and athletes and teams. And do you feel like it's kind of getting back to where it was beforehand? Because I think, you know, there has to be a bit of an adjustment, or there had to have been a bit of an adjustment, especially with certain players that weren't playing for a while.
Oh man, it was extremely hard on our athletes here. I mean, you know, most, if not all other leagues, you know, certainly found a way to play. You know, NCAA found a way, you know, teams, you know, moving to the bubbles and things like that. Like, I think the fact that we did not play at all for an entire year and then, you know, got a late start and a shortened season in year two, man, like, I can't even tell you how hard, you know, it was on the athletes and losing their years. And it was, you know, keeping them engaged as a coach, you know, was you know, a mess. But, like, honestly, I think this is the first Capital Hoops we've had now in 3 years. So, you know, it ties that question ties great into this Friday, right? Like, you know, sort of a sign that we're almost, or if not all the way back, right? Like, here we are, you know, we're going to have Capital Hoops again, great crowd, great environment, just like it was in 2020. And maybe we can sort of put all that in the past. And this is a cool moment to say that, okay, you know, like, U Sports basketball is back and Capital Hoops is back, and let's have a great game. And, you know, like, let's put on a show for the fans.
Are you pumped as a coach for this game?
Oh, man, absolutely. I don't know. Like, I'm always kind of the coach that seems, I don't know, I guess half asleep sometimes on the sidelines compared to some of these guys. I've certainly been accused of that. But it's, you know, like, it's a lot of fun, man. Like, I've been sort of being interviewed, you know, leading up to these games, and I say I would play Carleton every game. It is, and it's a test for the coaching staff. It's a test for the players. The environment is great. The rivalry is great. It brings out the best. It brings out some great moments. You know, it's the most attended game in Canada outside the Raptors. You know, stuff like that is just incredible. And I absolutely, like, I'm fired up. I can't wait for tomorrow night. And again, it's been 3 years. So I'm probably twice as excited. It's just, you know, this is what it's all about. And yeah, I can't wait for tomorrow night.
How much have they helped raise your program to a different level, knowing that here's the best program in the history of U Sports, probably any sport, right across town, and you've been competitive with them, you know, certainly for the last decade plus, because you have to reach a certain level, otherwise they're going to embarrass you.
No, I mean, look, you know, my... You know, working with Dave DeViro and watching Capital Hoops come out of the, you know, the battles between Dave and Coach Smart, and being a part of that and watching it grow and knowing that, you know, you could be number two in the country and you might as well, but you're dead last in your own city. Like, it raises the bar. It causes you to work harder at recruiting and, you know, working hard on learning and getting better as a coach and your players. And it just brings out the best in everybody. And, you know, Carleton's had their success, and I'm sure they would say with or without us. You know, I'd like to think that the rivalry and Capital Hoops has benefited both programs, you know, in all kinds of ways. And, you know, they've certainly pushed us, we're aware of that. But that doesn't take anything away. We're not thanking them for it. We're looking to knock them off. But there's no question that both programs have benefited greatly from the rivalry.
Last one, just on, you know, double duties, right? Because you're back with the Blackjacks this year. But how much have you learned coming back from the pro game, working with college kids, and maybe vice versa, just in terms of dealing with professional athletes and student athletes?
Oh man, I mean, like, it's been great coming back, and you know, I'm really fortunate to have had the Blackjacks experience last summer and looking forward to it again this summer. But it certainly has changed my perspective for the better with our student athletes. I think, you know, through the pandemic, you know, I think at times we were so, I'm not sure I'm gonna get the word right, but, you know, we were so worried, I guess, about not only student athletes, students, you know, everyone really, that I'd forgotten a little bit about, you know, accountability and things that, you know, we had kind of thrown out the window during the pandemic because we weren't sure how, you know, coworkers or kids were going to react. And I think like being around the pros this summer and being able to hold and talk to some of these really, really good players and see them respond, it just kind of reminded me that like, oh, right. You know, like athletes want to be coached, athletes want to be pushed and they want to be challenged, and that like, don't underestimate, you know, that they can handle it. And coming back here this year and certainly put our guys on sort of watch from the beginning. And, you know, I still stand by that. I think that we underestimate young people at times at what they're capable of dealing with and what they're capable of being pushed. And it's the response has been great from our players. And you know, I stay true to that. Like, I think, you know, in order to be great, you got to challenge and you got to push people. And if they're not up for it, they're not up for it. But you can't just sugarcoat everything and hope it works out. I really think that probably was a bit of a, we went too far the other way during the pandemic. And I think that was probably the biggest lesson I learned over the summer with the professional players.
James, always great stuff. Can't wait for tomorrow. Always one of my favorite events of the year. Look forward to the call. Look forward to seeing you there as well. Best of luck tomorrow for your program. And can't wait till tip-off.
Okay, guys. All right. I appreciate you having me on. Thanks a lot.
James Derwin, head coach of the Ottawa GGs, joining us on the Gabriel Pizza Hotline. It's the official pizza of the Ottawa Senators.
Good interview, eh?
Yeah.
Good talker. Good insight. Yeah. Good conversation.
And he's done a really good job with that program.
No kidding.
Because, again, you can't state it enough. They have been number two in this city, but it's not like they're languishing as a mediocre program. This is one of the best programs in the country. And I think both schools have benefited from the fact that there's no doubt Ottawa has benefited from the fact that Carlton's been there. Now, maybe you could say they haven't because they would have won a handful of national championships, but the level of their program is higher, beating NCAA schools, for example.
Yeah.
And Carlton has benefited as well.
It's like guys having to go up against Tiger Woods. Like, honestly, the Carlton program has been like the gold standard.
Yeah.
And done things that, I mean, talk about U Sports. I mean, there's no program that dominates like Carlton basketball. So it's you have to raise your game. And I think, you know, Dave Smart and Taffy and the people over at Carlton will tell you that it's been good that they've been pushed by Ottawa U doing what they've done and become second best.
If it was Laurentian across town and quality of that program, it probably wouldn't be as good for the city. No disrespect intended to our good friends from Laurentian and Sudbury, one of my favorite Ottawa towns.
Nice recovery.
They're just not very good at basketball. Back with more in a moment. We've got Brendan Dunlop at 4:25 talking John Herdman and Scott Rintoul at 5:05. A very cool project that he launched this week about the West Coast Express. Best line in Canucks history. Morrison, Bertuzzi, Naslin, how it all came together. Talk to him at 5:05 as we continue with The Drive on TSN 1200. Oh, great tune. Great tune. Cam, you're killing it today.
Yeah, job, Red.
AJ Jakubek, Chris Stevenson, Cam Clement, little Thin Lizzy. Love Thin Lizzy. Seems like some stations only want to play The Boys Are Back in the Town. They've got a lot more good tunes than that. You know what we're going to do in the 4 o'clock hour, Chris Stevenson?
What are we going to do, AJ? You're the man. Well, Cam's really the man with his hand on the tiller. Kind of like, you know, going along.
Most important.
You're the captain. I don't know. I guess you're the captain. I'm like Gilligan. I'm like, what are we going to do?
So you just alerted me to, what is that? What show was that?
Rich Eisen
the
show.
The Rich Eisen show.
Yeah.
Jesse Palmer, Ottawa boy.
Yeah.
Was on.
Yeah.
He's talking about his time on The Bachelor and how it related to, you know, when he was playing for the Giants.
Yeah.
And there's some great tidbits on there. I haven't even seen the whole thing.
Yeah.
We're going to play it for you next hour.
The Jesse Palmer, such a great storyteller. You'll hear him and you'll be able to the show is filmed, recorded, so you can actually watch it. But just like his facial expressions and, I mean, hearing it is good enough, but his facial expressions and everything else, Jesse Palmer is a hell of a storyteller. And he's so, you know, clearly became very polished with all his work on TV and everything else. And I saw this and I watched it and I thought it was so good. I wasn't really showing it to you for us to be able to play it. It was kind of in the back of my mind, but after watching it again, like you said, it's really good. It's really good storytelling.
So we'll play that after the top
it's,
of the
it's,
hour.
Yeah, it's only like 5 minutes long. It's like five minutes.
It's entertaining.
In 30 seconds or whatever. But
I'm
yes,
glad
it's,
you
very
alerted
it's very entertaining.
Me to that. That's okay. Very well done. So we've been talking about the National Hockey League and all the ratings are down. Let's get to some texts from that from early in the show. Because quite a few came in. Just trying to find a lot of texts here today. Mike says ESPN can do better coverage. They got all production and integration of podcasts and talk shows lined up. Fact is, when they got the rights, they did it with UFC. Yet when they got hockey, nothing changed.
Mm.
Only time First Take or any of ESPN sports talk shows in the U.S. talk about hockey was the cup champion for 5 minutes at the end of the show. I can recall once Stephen A. Smith commented on Connor McDavid struggling years ago. They have the time and experts and the app to get more involved, but they don't. There's tons of hockey content out there, yet it never gets on the radar above baseball or the UFC. I'm not trying to say they will ever give it the same as the NFL and the NBA, but it's abysmal at best. That's from Mike. So there's another take.
Yeah,
I've heard a lot about ESPN coverage not being up to snuff. I haven't spent as much time in the United States as I did. I spent a lot of time in the U.S. on trips, especially in the spring.
Yeah.
From about 2008 to 14, I was going there almost every spring. Actually, you could say 2017. So for a 10-year span, I really had a pretty good pulse on their coverage. And there's no doubt. I mean, ESPN, now this was after the change, right? ESPN didn't have the rights.
Yeah.
But it was basically in the spring, so much coverage on the NFL and the NFL draft.
Yeah.
But that's what people... I mean, it's hard because that's a chicken of the egg thing, right?
Exactly. Right on. But I just, does it not feel like, you know, and John Shannon put out an excellent book on, you know, John Shannon ran Hockey Night in Canada for years. He put out an excellent book about his time running Hockey Night in Canada. And does it not feel like we've been watching exactly the same kind of broadcasts for like 50 years? And it's no knocking our colleagues on the TV side of it. But I just, like, I watch, you could almost say the same kind of thing about golf. But one of the things they've done with golf, and you know that I'm a golf geek, and I watch golf almost every week. I'm not saying that I watch every single round, but I will watch like a college invitational just because I'm interested in seeing the golf course. I like looking at, on a snowy winter's day, I like looking at nice blue skies and in warm weather and a nice golf course and some beautiful scenery. But, and I follow all kinds of interesting Twitter accounts, you know, No Laying Up and the Fried Egg and a bunch of these really, really smart guys who have come into the golf media ecosystem and have got some interesting takes. And one of the things I think that's improved golf broadcasting is they have delved into the analytics. So there's a lot more compared to hockey. There's a lot more stats thrown your way, and guys who can kind of put them in context. And I'm not talking about Paul Azinger here, that's for sure. But there's a lot of guys who can kind of Brendel Chambly on the Golf Channel putting these things in context. You know, helping you identify what in specific cases are the smart stats to be looking at, and why a particular player is doing so well. And I feel like the NHL coverage, and we see glimpses of it, but they barely scratch the surface with all the things that are available to them now in terms of what they could be telling us. And I think about even if you're at a Senators game, sometimes on the in-house feed. So when I'm doing, you know, pre and post game stuff out there in intermissions, you'll see things on the side of the screen, which will just be tidbits like how far a player has skated that night so far. And if he's on the ice, the amount's going up, like as he's, it's real time. And shifts between players. Like I don't, there's so much information available to us now. The important thing is being able to sift through all of it and identify what's actually relevant to a conversation. I try and do that on here. You know, the whole 5-on-5 discussion, I think, started on TSN 1200 about the Senators issue with 5-on-5 play. And I think TV, especially being a visual medium, has kind of missed the boat a little bit on having all this information available to them and not using a lot of that to explain what's going on the ice. We still pretty much just get the regular, here's what happened. We're going to go to an interview with a player after the period. And I just feel like there's so much room there to tap into these really sharp analytics people and use that as more of a way of storytelling to engage people to watch the games. Cause I feel like it's just been the same formula for so long, and there's so much available to us now in terms of being able to tell the story of a game or tell the story of a player, to tell us the story of Alex DeBrincat and whether indeed he's just been unlucky this year, or has there been a change to his game that's affected his goal scoring total? I'd love to see more of those stories told on the broadcasts.
A couple more texts here. We've seen a few of these, about three of them. People talking about numbers being down just because they're artificially higher because people weren't able to attend sports, but that doesn't explain year over year the NFL.
Right. Yeah.
So if all leagues were down 22%, then you'd be able to say that, but that's not the case. That's why this thing is troubling for the league, right? I mean, it's not.
Well, and that's and that's
to
why
me one way or the
and
other.
That's why it's so important to have context to numbers, and that's like an interesting argument year over year. But I mean, buildings in the States were opened up, like they didn't have the same level of lockdowns and restrictions that we did have in Canada. So I think it's fair, correct me if I'm wrong, folks, but I think it's fair to compare year over year last year to this year when it comes to NHL TV ratings in the States, because their buildings have been open up. They haven't had restrictions.
And another one that says, let's say it, there's no real hate in hockey anymore, hence few real rivals. Hate is good for hockey. That's from Dave. All right, we'll take our...
Quoting Dean Brown, that's Dean's line.
Yeah. Agreed with you on that one, for sure. I think the game is great, but the lack of unpredictability from a physical standpoint, which isn't coming back, I get that. Health and safety has to be a priority. But that has to be a factor for some people.
Yeah.
Take our top hour break. When we come back, CFRA news update. I'm not even going to sell what you need to know because there's nothing going on. Thanks, NHL. And then we're going to play Ottawa native Jesse Palmer. Snippet from his time on the Rich Eisen show. And just talking about The Bachelor and how it related to his time with the New York Giants. Funny stuff. All on the other side. Brennan Dunlop at 4:25 to talk John Herdman. Scott Rintoul talk about his podcast about the West Coast Express at 5:05. It's The Drive on TSN 1200.